Welcome, everybody. It is BNP Weekly. It is 24th of August. Yes, it is 24th of August 2020. And we are back within the weekly cycle after the summer vacation. Well, we had already previous one. But anyway, so in the BNP Weekly, talk about what's happening in the Microsoft 365 side in general. Typically have a visitor here like today. But before we go there, my name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a principal program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint engineering side and work on the ecosystem or the M365 ecosystem. And with me as a co-host is Valde.
Who are everybody. My name is Valde Mosegas. I'm head of product at Rancor. And today we have a guest I don't know whether it's sunny or rainy. I know it's probably warm. Istanbul, Ayça Baş. Welcome, Ayça.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ayça Baş, and I'm working as cloud advocate at Microsoft. It's really sunny in Istanbul, but not as much as Dubai.
Yes, yeah. I have a few friends in Dubai, and they showed some pictures recently with the humidity being just out of this world. I think it's not a nice time to visit Dubai at this moment because it's too hot. So. On the other hand, not that many people travel that much because of the current situation in the world either. So I think it's okay. Anyway, Ayça, so you've been in Microsoft for quite a few years. Can you talk about your history and before we go to what do you do nowadays?
Yeah, sure. So my relationship with Microsoft started as Microsoft Student Partner Program. I think it still exists, but now they call themselves as MSFD Student Ambassadors. So the program, I joined the program when I was a student. So the program helps a lot when you want to learn about Microsoft technologies like Azure, M365, and if you're interested in learning new coding skills, it's really helpful for you to get lots of materials. So I've been in the program for a long time. For the ones who have no idea about the program, it's actually almost the same thing with MVP program, but it's for students. So we got a lot of chance to create articles, contents, videos, and so on. So it was amazing with all these years with lots of students collaborating with each other in the projects and so on. So it's a really nice one to get network around Microsoft as well as around students. So you get to meet lots of people outside of your country from many different universities and so on. During that time, I learned a lot of Microsoft technologies when I was a student, and then I joined Microsoft officially as an intern, actually. When I say intern,
that's not actually that rare, right? We do have a quite big intern program, so a lot of people aren't getting.
Yes, actually, when I say intern, sometimes people think that it's not a big responsibility, but at Microsoft, it's really a big responsibility. Most of the time, interns get as much as work as MSFT employees. So during that time, I was a part of the developer experience team. Back then, it was a subsidiary focused team. So I was reporting to Microsoft Turkey developer experience team. And I was responsible of MSP program, student partner program. So I get to learn lots of new technologies with Azure, like bot framework, cognitive services. I get to have a roadshow organized around Microsoft Turkey. We visited, I think, 21 different cities around Turkey. And we get to talk in the universities about Azure. And actually, student partners were organizing all these stuff. So after the internship, I joined Microsoft in the College Hires program. Microsoft has a huge program. I think it is called Aspire now. In the back then, we were calling us as MUC. So
yeah,
I was a MUC, and my first role as a MUC was PFE, Premier Field Engineer. And Yeah.
Going directly deep, like, let's do this. Like, you will help customers with their problems.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a really nice place to learn technologies in deep.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know, Vesa, you were in services too. So you may have experience with the PFEs, consultants. So I was working with lots of customers all around Europe, Middle East, and Africa. When I started, I was just focusing on accreditations and certifications, but it didn't took so long for me to visit customers. And I was doing this consultancy stuff for almost 4 years.
Yeah.
when I was a PFE, I was focusing on most of Azure-related stuff, like web services, bot service, bot framework, and also Azure bot services, cognitive services, and all this stuff, as well as .NET Core was my primary area. And then during my PFE role at the beginning, probably 2 years ago, I started getting requests like chatbot creating appointment in the calendar, chatbot doing sending emails, chatbot doing this, doing that. And that time I started using Microsoft Graph. And I was just using Microsoft Graph as an API, but with COVID-19, I actually started getting lots of big projects from very big customers. We started focusing on doing entire provisioning for the governments from Azure Active Directory to Teams so that they can move their work environment to Teams. So I was super involved with Graph team, back then Graph product team, in my last couple of months projects. And here I am, is it?
And here you are. Full circle.
Let's get actually, before we go to the Cloud Advocate side of the house and what are you doing now, or the future things, but coming back on the COVID-19 and the spring 2020, I think the spring 2020 has been really kind of a fundamental for many organizations on forcing them to move to the cloud. And that's basically what you saw as well. So a lot of the governmental agencies, they needed to move to the cloud because of the remote work and all of that. Was that initially the thing which actually pushed stuff moving?
Even before that, I was getting requests related with Graph and Teams, but it was not that huge because we were doing many proof of concepts as PFE. So we were trying stuff first with bots, cognitive services, plus Graph and Teams. And then if customer accepts, then we were going for the production level of project. But with COVID-19, we were actually pushed for digital transformation. Everything was so quick, projects were so big, and then we needed to do all the provisionings in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and we needed to find solutions. And we were actually quite lucky because product team on that side and Enter65 side, they were super responsive, and they were really helping us in the field. We were having lots of chats during the day. They were answering questions. They were joining the calls at 12 a.m., 2 a.m., just to help customer and so on.
Perfect.
It was a really busy time and a great time for us to learn doing stuff. And there was a huge improvement in the products as well. I mean, I'm looking at Microsoft Teams right now. It's in a totally different level.
It is.
And it's an amazing tool.
And it's really evolved in the past like 6 months. Obviously, the situation within the world forced us to really, really get stuff moving and pushing out features and functionalities. And I think it was relatively, I think it was actually yesterday, there was a Twitter tweet which was related on the four or five big things related on Microsoft Teams, which will take over Zoom, which, okay, debatable. But I think it was, it's the Snowden, who's the commander, the PowerShell guy, Waldeck, helped me.
Jeffrey Snover.
Yeah, Jeffrey Snover said really well, actually, in Twitter, just noted on the Twitter that we do not, as a Microsoft, we do not compare ourselves to the competitors. We want to fulfill the customer requests and fulfill what they do. Don't make that face, Valdek.
Well, I mean, it's on one hand, I can imagine
you're
that.
You're in camera. Careful.
I know. And it's like, I think on one hand, yes, you have big plans, like big direction where you want to go. But on the other hand, I think you also listen to market, the customers, and
Absolutely.
What others do.
Absolutely.
Right? So I think it's, I wouldn't say it's like, no, we don't, but I think what's being tried to say is that you don't let others dictate your planning.
Yeah.
I think that is the sentiment.
And I think if you think about in general, let's say IT industry, it's quite typical that people are following up on what's happening across the industry and then copying ideas and getting ideas across. It's been the fundamental piece of IT industry since the 70s. So I think
it's also an interesting thing, right? Because it's like coincidence. I think I wrote about it last week on my blog. Like, there is no prize for adding a feature to product in theory. Like, you can just keep adding stuff, Like, because there is no limit. Like, it's not like you build a house and there's a finite number, I don't know, amount of room you have or bricks you can use. Like, in product, you can just add features. But at some point, like, the more you add, the harder it is to use the product. Because it will have everything and anything. Like, and if you just look around you and look at others and don't follow your gut, well, then you will end up having a Swiss knife that kind of does everything, but does nothing really good. And it doesn't really make any sense. Right? So you will be all over the place and you will be able to tick every box on every RFP and RFI, but users will not really love the product because they will be confused.
Now we're getting completely distracted on the discussion, but I have a good example on the complexity of things. So really great example in the office world was actually introduction of ribbon, the ribbon in the top bar. And then we started adding features and ribbons and dabs and features and additional things. And now we are ended up in a situation where people cannot find this, how to do the simple things. And then in the modern SharePoint, we adapted the ribbon as well. And then we were unable to actually, now we're getting rid of it. It's too complex for end user to do that.
But it was exactly the same thing. I think it was around the time where you introduced ribbon that people said, like, huh, I didn't know you could do it in Word. I was like, yeah, you can do it since Word 93. And it was like, really, what? It was about things like paragraphs or building a TOC or indexes or whatever. Like, it was all there all this time. And people just didn't know about it because there's like 20 million options in the menu.
Yeah. Yeah.
Word could seriously do everything, and it can still do all of that.
I think
our product team started getting lots of great feedbacks because literally everyone started using Office 365 day to day because in COVID-19 we couldn't go out and the entire communication was going through Teams and we started needing different stuff in Teams. For example, that time when I was working with one customer and it was a big one, they were transitioning entire working environment to Microsoft Teams, and they needed the auditing reporting, they needed a reporting for call quality. And then since we were working with the product team day to day, they were like, okay, let's try to build something. And now, bam, we have call quality dashboard. And then customer asks one more stuff, and bam, the other day they add something new in the Power BI for call quality dashboard, another column and so on. So it is kind of okay for them to get the customer feedback. I'm sure they are prioritizing it. Probably they don't do all of them, right?
I can imagine that. Yeah,
of course. And obviously, every single product should be created for the customer based on the customer requests. Absolutely. But it's the interesting balance between, do we add stuff, everything? If there's one person who requests the feature, should we add it? No, we should add it if there's a significant amount of people asking that. So it's a clear demand.
It depends, right? It depends because the customers have also this notion that they ask for things, but they might not always need exactly what they need. So even though they ask for something, maybe they don't know that you could do it differently and that it's better, right? So it's also this product management role is a hard job because you need to distill the market trends, customer needs, and really understand the needs as opposed to just blindly listen. Okay, they ask for a report, so they want to have a report. Like, okay, but if you have a report, what will you do with it next? Like, so you don't want to have a report, you want to have this. And it's like, it clicks, right? So it's also this additional thing of really trying to distill the real need behind the question.
Absolutely. Now, Aisha, let's actually concentrate then on the future. So I've sidetracked that on the completely different discussion again, which happens quite often. So, but it's
scripted.
It's scripted.
It's planned.
Yes. But you said that you're a cloud advocate for Microsoft 365. Can you explain for the audience what does that actually mean?
Yes, sure. So our team is super new. We are calling ourselves as M365 Advocacy. So we have a group of people just hired in the team, and we are focusing on different stuff. And I'm sure you interviewed some of them already, or you will. We are focusing on Microsoft Graph, Microsoft Teams, and Fluid Framework. My area specifically is Microsoft Graph, but I'm also creating lots of contents on Microsoft Teams and trying to find areas how we can collaborate with Fluid Framework as well. Hopefully something new and new stuff will be coming up soon with that. I was never a SharePoint developer, so I was
there is still chance, right?
I was really interested in learning SharePoint development because there is a huge audience around it, and thankfully I have another colleague. He's an expert on that area, SharePoint. I was always focusing on development areas with .NET, JavaScript, and Azure related. Stuff. So my responsibility is basically consuming graph on areas where we can collaborate with Azure, we can get benefit of Azure, and also .NET JavaScript, because there are lots of scenarios we can make stuff easy for everyone in the background process automations, as well as productivity applications. And I'm basically focusing on the areas where we use normal development stuff with graph. And
are you saying that SharePoint is not normal? No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I'm sorry.
No, but it's also, so obviously I'm from SharePoint organization and engineering, but it doesn't mean that the SharePoint engineering would be, or SharePoint development would be any different. You're using Azure Functions, you're building cognitive databases, you're using cognitive services, you're calling
Power
the bots, you're using Power Apps, you're using SharePoint Framework to build Microsoft Teams tabs. So it's nothing different anymore. Everything is getting more consolidated.
So actually sometimes there is no even code, because some of the contents I'm creating is related with Power Platform, Power Automate, Graph, and so on. So sometimes there's no code at all.
Yeah, whatever code actually is, because if you're calling an Azure Microsoft Graph from Power Automate, it's not simple. So somebody might say that you're kind of coding, because it's not just track and drop. You need to actually define some JSON definitions and API calls and all of that. So what is coding? What is not coding?
Always like the best part of everything, auth.
Yes, always the best thing, absolutely. But okay, so that was Microsoft Graph, Microsoft Teams, and obviously Fluid Framework. Fluid Framework is now in preview, so people can play around with that, but there's an extensibility platform coming to that. We actually had a Fluid Framework Dev Kitchen already last November, where we were testing with partners how the Fluid Framework would work in a certain scenarios, and then be learning based on that, and then adjusting the scenarios. Right now, it's still not available for third party or extensibility, and the Fluid Framework as such, but coming soon. And then Microsoft Graph is evolving certainly significantly. If you think about all of the different platforms and capabilities which we're releasing all the time, and the latest being Todo was going GA on last Friday. Yeah. So
not
cool.
GA, in preview. Well, preview is in GA.
Preview in GA, okay. The taxonomy Graph APIs went to preview. So there's a lot of things as well. Which, by the way, reminded me, that's not even open on my articles, because anyway,
I'll quickly
open it up in here because we're code sure. Now, for the Cloud Advocate thing, so there's obviously you're kind of helping the community or helping activities. What's the day-to-day life? What do you actually do? So
my initial focus is, of course, content creation. I want to make sure that we have good quality of content out there. It doesn't matter the platform. It can be official Microsoft platform, or it can be a third-party platform, but it's always nice to have some samples and some articles, so it will be useful for the developers, M365 community as well. So I am trying to create as much useful content as possible. If you're lacking of some content in specific areas, then I'm trying to focus on that part. Another area I focus is Microsoft Docs. So I'm trying to support product team in the quality of Microsoft Docs. If we have any tutorials that is out of date, I'm trying to update those ones too. And the third part is, of course, the events. I'm joining lots of meetups, meetup conferences, and trying to talk about what's new in Microsoft Graph. Recently, I had lots of conferences related with Microsoft Graph Toolkit, and it's getting really interesting. Actually, we started getting lots of audience on that area too. Yep. Another thing is, since I have experience in the customer in the field, I already have some content available. Let's say that I'm not only focusing on, oh, let's use this technology with Graph, this technology in Graph, but we were 100% focused on solving problems in the customers. So I already had so many solutions related with customers' problems. I'm trying to create content around it so everybody will be using those, maybe get benefit of these scenarios. Maybe they're also looking for some solutions of automating stuff or creating applications, consuming Graph or Teams. Since they are the real life customer problems, I'm trying to just prioritize, as well as maybe adding some new stuff if we have new releases, and create as much good quality content as possible, and trying to use them in the events too, so people get a chance to see it in the live demo and maybe try, because everybody has their own taste. Some people like reading blogs, some people like watching videos, and just trying to be everywhere available in each and every platform. So
and that... now also here on podcast.
Exactly. And in video blogging. So but what you're saying is really really kind of it resonates on the BNP stuff, which we've been doing as well, because back in 2013 when we started this initiative internally, it started from the customer projects. And it really started on the, hey, we have a lot of this reusable learnings. Why wouldn't we share this to be available worldwide? Because then people learn from it. And the beauty of having based on customer engagement is that they're real world. So they're not just a random person sitting at their home coming up with a, hey, what if customer wants to do X and Y and Z? No. It's actually real world customer learnings, which is really, really cool. So, and that's really the power of obviously of community also on collecting samples together and building community, because then people who work with customers face to face on a day-to-day basis, they can contribute back on the samples and documentation for sure. So.
Yeah, I was really excited to join this advocacy team because day-to-day PFE life, I didn't get a chance to write about stuff I'm doing. Yeah. And my colleagues were asking, Acha, how did you do this? How did you do that? And you copy-paste same stuff again and again. And when I was in student partner program, we were always asked to write about what we're doing and create videos about what we're doing. And to be honest, sharing a link of blog post is always easier than copying and pasting same stuff again and again. That's why with this advocacy role, I get a chance to talk about stuff I did so far and write about them, so it will be useful for the community too. So it's really, I'm super excited, and hopefully we will do more and more about Microsoft Graph and Teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and also I think there's this another angle to put things on your own blog, like, how many times have you searched for something only to end up on your own blog? It's like, I did that.
True.
It's like, because there is some obscure notes, or you needed some specific template ID of something, or you needed this like specific error. And it's like, I know this from something. And you search like, huh? That was it. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like, I know this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, compliment myself.
Yes. Or then you have I talked about this joke a while back as well, but I had a relatively big, like multi-million dollar, 10 millions of dollar project running with certain partners back in 2012, when I was still in a consulting side. And then we had a debate within the project in the technical planning. And the person who I was having a debate, his argument was, well, I wrote about this one guy, this Vesa from Microsoft. See his blog here is saying blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, I'm the guy. So I know what I wrote. But it's an interesting perspective as well. And that's also about something which is good that it changing, because people, I think nowadays the technology is giving us this opportunity of having these kind of video calls and video discussions, so that the people behind of those technical blogs and Twitter accounts and everything else will be more approachable. And we know that they're actual people. They're not just...
Well, and also this huge shift in the docs, right? Because if you go back, I don't know, let's say 10 years, MSDN. Like that was static repo that it was very hard to get anything in there because this was very this elaborate process, compiling content every few weeks. Whereas now it's all open source. You see a typo, you go to GitHub, submit PR, and it's fixed immediately, right? Or you see a gap for content that is in there. Well, you think that you want to do it. It's okay. You write the article, submit, and it's your name, you content. You create the official docs. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly. And it's nothing different being an internal Microsoft or being
external
a developer
person,
out there because they also ask us to create pull requests. And from out there, you can also create pull requests and update stuff. And you can be the one writing entire docs. So it's really cool.
Absolutely. Now, let's do a quick break on the discussions and move to the articles for a while, and then we'll come back on the closing. So let's talk about the latest news, what has happened within the last week from the Microsoft Teams and Microsoft Graph and community side. So let me share my screen from here. So let's start with the Microsoft Teams. They had a few new articles on their blog related on updates on the things. And basically, updates related on devices for sharing space, July and August updates. And basically, additional capabilities, pinning attendees in the Surface Hub, you're able to have capabilities available, proximity-based meeting join. Interesting.
So the one thing that I wanted to ask, like if you share your room with a cat, does that also count as sharing room devices? Because I want devices, but I'm only in the room by myself, so...
Yeah, that's true as well. Yeah, so fair point. We're hoping that the world will come gradually to a normal state at some point. So live captioning is, by the way, now available in collaboration bars. So live captioning is really good, especially if you have somebody who speaks Finglish. It's good that it's translated that in English.
Well, then getting auto-caption, like you would have to have a person who understands Finglish to caption Finglish.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So that's why we have artificial intelligence in Azure, right? So we can actually do that. And machine learning slightly, and we'll make it happen. Raise hand support for Microsoft Teams rooms, collaboration bounce on Surface Hub. The raise hand is really nice, by the way. We're using that nowadays really all the time in the meetings as well. So it's not about who's yelling. It's about, hey, I have something to say in general. Default volumes in speakers, manage Teams devices, Teams admin center, which is really nice as well. So you can actually control the conference rooms directly from the admin center. And that's really, really cool stuff as well. Now, the other one from Microsoft Teams was a four ways to simplify the work with Microsoft Teams and Power Automate. And Power Automate obviously is a big focus area in Microsoft as well, together with Microsoft Teams. So there's new templates and new functionalities available, so showing how the Power Automate can be used in Microsoft Teams, project management template, as the product development template as well, and the fourth one is any team follow-up on important conversation template.
I'm coming from Slack originally. I miss this in Teams a lot. Like you have something in there, like I want to know about it in an hour because now I'm doing something else. I want to get back to this within an hour or tomorrow.
Yeah.
It isn't there. Like, oh, really? So, yeah, this is very, very good.
How is it informing? Sending you an email, hopefully not. Maybe doing a
this
message.
This one, I don't know what it does.
But, I haven't double-checked it. But hopefully it's sending message in Teams by saying, hey, you asked me to remind you.
I hope so, too.
But we can double-check that on later. Now, let's not deep dive on the article and just introducing what's new. So this one, figuring out with Bob. Mark Cashman is from our SharePoint, OneDrive SharePoint marketing, and Bob is a cloud advocate who used to be a partner architect in the Microsoft side as well. Well, he used to be an MVP as well, and he's done quite a long time on this journey. And nice blog podcast, basically talking about Bob's history and all of the articles which he has written in his blog. So Bob is a good example of a nice cloud advocate helping on multiple areas. And he's, by the way, as an example, he's leading the Microsoft Teams sample gathering for the BMP side, which is really cool. So AKMS Teams samples, And basically, we have a PMP initiative where we're collecting all of the Microsoft samples, community samples under one same umbrella, so people can easily then find what are you looking for. So if you're looking for bots, you can then target on which bot framework, and then you'll find those samples. And we're surfacing here also the Microsoft Teams app templates, which are Microsoft done, and other samples as well. So. And obviously welcome community contributions, absolutely.
Wink, wink.
In the same way as we have done in other areas as well. The key point being on the fact that whenever you as a developer or a customer or partner, it's like, well, I need to do X and Y and Z. Where can I find a sample? Right now, you can theoretically think that there's a sample somewhere in GitHub, but if you can't find it, it's really, really hard to find it. And you spend a lot of time on then circling around. Having everything surfaced in one location makes it just easy. And in the long run, obviously, we're looking into having a much more, let's say, advanced UX, where you can actually target to any Microsoft 365 sample by filtering down on the selection. Right now, this is relatively simple still. Anyway, that's about that one. Good, let me get back in. That was figuring out with Bob German. Now here, the new and improved Microsoft Graph To-Do APIs are now in public preview, and this was announced on Friday. So we talked about them originally in Build 2020. We actually, you actually implemented something on the personal application for Microsoft Teams related.
Correct.
On this. But that was early on, and there was something weird related on that. Most likely it has been now.
Yeah, so basically back then we assumed that the APIs are available because they were mentioned. So
yeah, they were mentioned.
So we tried to get them to work. They kind of worked, but basically we were ahead of time. So now we can basically double check that everything works the way it's supposed to work because now they're officially available.
Yeah, and there's a new set of permission scopes which are being managed also, and how the system actually works. Now, this one was also mentioned on Friday from Vincent, who's the next MVP as well, been now for Microsoft roughly a year or so on the Graph team. So change tracking improvements, notification of change tracking in Microsoft Graph. So improvements on the V1 and beta side as well. And this one, Aisha, I'm putting you on the spot on this one. Can you quickly explain what is a notifications and change tracking in Microsoft Graph? What's the value out of this? Why would people be interested?
Yes, so let's talk about a customer scenario. Let's say that a new person edit in Azure Active Directory and you want to automate whenever a user edits in the system. I'm assuming that person is a new person in the company, then you can add that person in the onboarding Teams channel. So to be able to understand who is added, instead of getting entire Azure Active Directory list of people and then comparing with the new one, who is added, who is not, because it may take minutes and even an hour.
Yep.
You can use this change notifications, change tracking graph, and then you can get the information about that person and automatically provision that person to Microsoft Teams channel. There are lots of ways to do that automation. Either you can use Power Automate, Logic Apps, or you can directly call it from your application in web application, mobile application. So this is a great way to understand what's happening in your Entry 65 data.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, it's not about kind of pulling the latest and comparing. It's all about getting notifications and what has changed, so you know who are the new people or updated people and all of that. So, or new lists in SharePoint, or new sites, or not new teams in Microsoft Teams. So there's multiple ways of approaching this. So really cool stuff. And this one, kind of related, I'm going to mention that. So taxonomy APIs we announced on last Thursday, unless I'm completely forgot the timing. I think I sent the blog this one in Thursday. So this one came out. So they're basically in a beta endpoint. We didn't write any blog post yet for it. Probably will do that as well. But basically, taxonomy store terms, groups, and all of that one have been exposed in the beta endpoint. And for that one, there's going to be sooner or later also change tracking and web hooks basically behind.
Really cool. Really cool. Like this API was asked for a long time. I think it's years.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it had 1,900 user voice entries, which I when I closed it on last Thursday. So that's pretty cool. So finally we're getting it out. Now, this one, just a reminder for those who are interested, we are executing Microsoft 365 BMP virtual conference, so which is in 1st of September. Because we do have a quite active team related on, well, Bob German, Elio, Laura Kokkarinen, Paolo Pialorsi, Velin, so many, Julie, so many people in here. And we just wanted to have a kind of a community approach, let's say, without any sponsors, just a seminar. People can join. There's a max, there are max 30-minute sessions. Well, some of them are 31 minutes and 20 seconds, if I remember correctly, because some of them just couldn't squeeze it in 30 minutes. Yes. But there's a 40-minute spot for every single session, and then you can actually select which of these you want to actually watch. And everything is obviously recorded, and then we'll get it out in the YouTube channel as well after the conference. But basically, without any sponsoring, without any complexity, just sign up, register, and next Tuesday, we're going to execute this one. Week from now, Tuesday. Yeah. So,
woohoo!
Isn't it? It's week from now. Yes, it is. 1st of September. Yeah. Good.
Remember, the 1st of September.
1st of September, indeed. Now, you want to, Aishak, do you want to actually do an introduction on your blog post? This is your blog. We didn't have anything new for this week, which is completely fine. It sounds like every single week there has to be new stuff. But what kind of things you're writing in your blog?
Actually, I'm focusing on areas where I think it will be useful for developers. Sometimes it's related with Grafen teams, and sometimes it's related with a chatbot. So it's 100% focusing on technology for sure. Whichever I tried in my previous role as well as in the future, whichever comes next. For example, my next purpose is to create content in To-Do, even though it's preview. I think I always wanted to have a bot sending me notifications on Teams, like today you have this list of To-Do. Actually, I'm just working on the scenarios and trying to write about it, because I think that putting them on GitHub will not be enough. Sometimes people like to follow the track and do exactly the same thing. There is no recurrence of writing content for me, because 1 week I'm focusing on speaking in an event, and another week I'm just creating a content for that event and do the demo. After doing the demo, I'm trying to put in the writing and trying to put it in my blog too. So it's basically my personal and also advocacy projects. I'm just writing them all in here.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Good introduction on, and there's a lot of cool stuff already available in the blog. So really, we highly recommend people to check it out. So, and subscribe, and then use the Twitter for following up on what's happening. So, right?
And GitHub and Instagram and LinkedIn.
Yes. Why can't we have an industry standard on following? So one social persona, and then you follow
the
person.
Depending on what, right? You follow somebody for code or for pictures, cat pictures.
I think Scott Hanselman had on the weekend, there was a nice thread and discussion related on if you follow, you always follow a person. And yes, you follow the technology and behind them what the person also selects, but hey, it's a persona still. It's a human being. And it's, in Scott's case, as an example, he's pretty vocal on politics every now and then. It's why does it matter? It doesn't, shouldn't matter. You do not have to follow those blog posts if you don't agree on the politics. But
exactly.
Anyway.
You can just scroll, ignore. Like, I don't care about politics in the US. Okay, skip it.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so no politics, no religion, no
family show.
In this podcast.
This is family show.
Yes.
But
I like
following colleagues in the social media, especially Twitter, because I'm learning a lot of stuff from them. And it's not only friends and family. It's sometimes quite useful to follow them in social media, especially instead of following my friends on Twitter. I prefer following my colleagues and community.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a fair point as well. Twitter is more, let's say, work-oriented by default than Instagram. Instagram is more maybe persona-based, and Facebook is then almost semi-private if somebody's still there, and LinkedIn is certainly job-based or career-based. So there's always different balances on things. So
I think that was the other day, as someone said, let me see if I can get it right. Twitter is for all the people you don't know whom you would like to know, where Facebook is for all the people whom you know who would rather not know.
One way of putting that. Huge. I think they will say, at least at some point, I haven't been super active in Facebook anymore, but they will say a rule that the only persons I will accept as my friends in Facebook are the ones which I had a chance to crack a wine or a beer or a tea together.
Yes.
So you actually have that interactivity rather than they know you from X and Y and Z and then they want to be your friends. Like, no, but I don't know you. So
how would that work now? So does that mean wine or beer over Teams?
That's a good question. Yeah.
We haven't done it that yet.
Yeah, maybe we should.
About time,
maybe
huh? Yeah.
Well, maybe we should consider. This is a completely random thought, but if there would be a lot of feedback related on the suggestion, we'll see what we can actually make it happen. But should we actually have a random, let's say, 30-minute gatherings with the community?
SharePoint or M365 Pint.
Exactly. Without any agenda. So just open.
Maybe PMP happy hour would be really nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Idea.
Something like that. Yes. We already have a weekly, let's say, blog videos and community calls, but they always concentrate on the demos and all of that. Just having gathering.
Well, that would be interesting. Like, how would you talk, right? Because like typically in these, let's say, post-events chats, like there's a group of three and another group of four,
that's
group
true.
Of two. And
that is true.
How would you facilitate that on Teams? There you go. Teams, there's a use case for you to consider for your product.
There's team rooms.
Like virtual groups.
Yeah, you can actually split the team discussion to rooms. So,
is it available already?
Yeah, I think it is.
There's a breakout room functionality. I'm not sure it's released yet, but it's a really nice one because we are doing lots of hackathons and so on. So people, if there's 100 people in the room, they can ask questions, but you can join the breakout room and they can share their screen and you can try to help them. It's a really nice use case. And also it's a nice use case for happy hour.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, we need to try it.
Yeah, maybe we should try this. Anyway, so, okay, coming back on the articles, good side discussion. So this one was from Velin. Valdek, I'm putting you on spot on this one. Do you want to actually talk about what this is?
Yeah, so this article is meant to address a number of things that we saw people come across when they try to use CLI for Microsoft 365, as it's called now, when authenticating using Assert. And it's not specific to CLI because it's like you will get the same issues when you try to run any other kind of application and you authenticate with Assert. Yeah. So in this article, Velin explains different permissions you need to have, for example, to create sites, how you work with that, and difference between, for example, modern sites, modern team sites versus comm sites. What are different requirements with regards to auth? Because at the end of the day, like, it's always the thing that before you can do anything, authentication has to be in place and you need to do it right. Otherwise, you will get these errors. And if you are not well versed in that, like, you will be banging your head against the wall and you will not be able to do anything. So with that, we strive to address these gaps or the hurdle of going through auth and then basically allowing you to do your work as opposed to try to debug auth, because that's like many folks apparently don't think it's fun.
It's never fun. So having a detailed on step, so that you can concentrate on the actual business objectives is always the key. So identity and authentication should be as simple as possible. But okay, one step at a time, we'll get it better and better. Now, moving forward, how to efficiently manage SharePoint news by Shawa Ferreira. Shawa?
Yeah.
I almost pronounced his name properly. So. That's a long running joke as well. Can't do that. But anyway, he has a good video on actually how to make those things happen and using PMP in PowerShell then to automate things and configure the experience in an optimal way. So really cool stuff from Shawa as well. This one is from Elnur, M365 Developer Associate Certification Prep Tips. But basically, you had a webinar,
correct,
Valdek, together with ACE to talk about how to prepare for MS365 exam. So, cool. And I think ACE had its own series of webinar as well. So,
correct. Going more in depth. Yeah.
Yeah. how to get past that. It's been, this certification has been around in GA starting from the start of the year or something like that. It took quite a long time.
I think it went live around February or
as
something.
A GA and Ignite, starting from Ignite last year, it's been in preview. We started creating that actually more than a year ago already. So it took a while to actually take it.
It only proves the point that M365 is really broad and there are a number of things. And at the end of the day, you have an exam that you want to plan for about, I don't know, an hour or two. So you cannot obviously ask everybody around everything, plus things change, right? So how do you pick the right things that prove someone's skills across the board?
Yes, and that's definitely the difficult one here as well. So because it's around Microsoft Identity, Microsoft Graph, and then SharePoint, Teams, and Office. So and Graph and Identity being the big ones. So interesting balancing out, because we talk about Microsoft 365 as a whole. So testing and validating that is really hard. Now, adding guests using Graph and endpoints ending up as mentors, adding guests using Graph ending up as mentioned from Abby, just explaining the behavior and how things work and just the finding. It's good that people are sharing this finding so that whenever you're searching on what's happening, why is it doing this, then, oh, somebody else has run into that as well. So,
yeah.
Sharing lists from Shao Ferreira as well. SharePoint share list and list items in Microsoft Teams. So this is actually pretty cool. It's an application customizer extension of list view command set, which can be added on a list. And then when you click it, share to Teams, you can actually share the item to Teams. So it's obviously behind the scenes is using then Microsoft Graph to actually do the integration. So really cool stuff as well.
Nice.
And this one, Jopix.
Joris Pullmans.
Thank you. Yes. Notes on learning work on learning to work with Microsoft Graph. So good set of notes again collected on those areas and helping people to learn how to get started. Obviously, Microsoft Graph, absolutely, Graph Explorer is the easiest way to understand how it actually works. And you sign in against your account and then you start testing around how things are working. Todd Clint created all user groups and distribution lists in Microsoft 365 and Azure AD. Really, how do you do this and how do you configure that in Azure AD? And what does it actually mean in practice when you're behaving or using those things in here as well? We're using dynamic distribution lists. That's actually a great idea. Absolutely. Good stuff from Todd as well. And this one was the last, just the Microsoft Teams development samples, because we've been talking about Microsoft Teams in here, and I showed that one. So let me actually stop sharing, and let's do a quick recap. It's Monday. What's going to happen this week? Aisha, what's on your schedule? Anything interesting on this week?
Yes, actually, I'm going to join yesterday I joined a meetup in a Microsoft Reactor Abu Dhabi. We talk about Microsoft Graph Toolkit. And this week,
I will pause because today is Monday. Yesterday is Sunday. You need to explain that. I know this, but why? Are they working on Sunday? What?
Yes. So Dubai, United Arab Emirates and some Gulf countries work between Sunday to Thursday. So Sunday is the beginning of the week for them. That's why we had a session on Sunday about Microsoft Graph Toolkit. Thanks for letting me know. Great note. And another one on Wednesday, I have another session with data and office community in Singapore. And we're going to talk about background process automation and insights around Entra 65 data using Azure and Microsoft Graph. And I have some other ones next week coming, but I think I'm going to share all of them on Twitter. So if you follow me on Twitter, you can get information.
That's a good way of collecting followers. So absolutely. Waldeck, what's happening on your table?
I am fiddling with a connector for Power Platform. So we have an API at Rancor that is secured with Azure AD B2C, and we want to expose the API in connector. I think it's a whole story of its own, again, auth. But it works. There are just a few adjustments that we need to do to the API. That is one. Two, I need to debug a Docker container, because do we have a .NET Core app in it, and it doesn't work for some things. So I need to work on that. Other than that, I think we are now in the last week of August, so we are closing to the September.
Yeah, time flies, right?
I think next weekend, so not the coming one, but the weekend after that, we have a release of CLI, which will be the V3, so next major version with a rename, cleaned up all backwards, incompatible changes, deprecated things that we've done over the last year. So it's a big moment for us. But on the other hand, it's just a release, right? So we have everything in place. We just need to ensure that we haven't missed anything, because if we want to ensure that we don't break anybody. Yeah. So basically we stay backwards compatible as long as we can, meaning it's now, and then the next moment for us is another year at least. All right, so we need to double check that we have dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, then we have everything in place. And if all is according to the plan, then next weekend there will be a V3 of CLI for Microsoft 365, as it's called now.
Is it the weekend after next week? Well,
September
depends on whatever
you mean.
Yeah,
September
exactly.
The 6th. There you go. Cool.
Yeah. And on my time, over my side, obviously, we have the conference coming up. I'm helping with that one. Ignite is coming, so we're recording Ignite sessions right now, so making sure that those are being covered. There's a lot of like day-to-day activities on the PMP side, which we're executing. Today, I've already spent 5 hours on solving up our data pipelines, which is always so much fun as well. So because obviously, to be able to understand what is being used, how it's being used, is super important so that we can make investments and funding decisions on the certain areas. And then whenever your data pipelines are crumbling down, then you're flying blind. And now we've been trying to figure out, there's a nasty internal tool deprecation, and now we need to move from a one tool to another, and that means that everything is
always fun, huh?
Yeah, that's
migration.
Always so much fun. Trying to figure out, and also noticing that not everything is documented. That's a classical thing as well. And when you're opening up the tools and you're like, hey, what is this? And what's this? Is somebody using this? You have no idea. Or in your reporting database or in Power BI, it's like, well, is somebody using this report or not? And is it important? So it's interesting, challenging things, but classical
you
things
can
always.
Turn it off, wait a week if no one complains.
That's the yelling metric.
So, yes, exactly. The yelling matter. Like, how far will it go?
And may I add one more thing?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there are lots of events coming up, and I'm talking all of them, but tracking them through Twitter sometimes is hard. So that's why I'm trying to keep my blog events part up to date. Yep. So if people are interested about Teams and Graph, most of the events I'm going to talk, most of them are public. So I'm sharing the links, all of them, and trying to collect everything in one place so they can get the agenda. If they're interested in what's coming next, they can check out my blog.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll mention that in the notes as well, so on the blog post as well. But I think that's it for now. So thank you, Aisha, for joining us on a super scripted and super formal discussion.
Like
this
always.
Well. Yes. Nobody said anything offensive. And yeah, this is good. This is good.
Thanks for having me. It's a really nice show. So it's a pleasure to be part of it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we'll be back with a new BMP Weekly within a week. So bye-bye, everybody. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.